Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Vali Nasr, Professor of International Politics at Tufts University. He was born in Iran and migrated with his family to the United States following the 1979 Islamic Revolution. His books include The Rise of Islamic Capitalism, Forces of Fortune, The Rise of the New Muslim Middle Class, and What It Will Mean to Our World, and The Shia Revival and Democracy in Iran. Between 2009 and 2011, he served in the Obama administration as the senior advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Vali Nasr.
Thank you.
And I just was speaking with former CIA officer Robert Baer, who's spent quite a lot of his career in Iran and in Lebanon dealing with Hezbollah. And he gives a pretty bleak picture of this potential conflagration that could happen with all these military exercises going on with Russian fleets in Syria, American fleets in Israel, and Iranian exercises in coming up in the next month, again, after following recent exercises to close the Straits of Hormuz. And what I got from him was this sense that the Iranian regime is paranoid to begin with and increasingly so.
I don't believe it's an issue of paranoia. I mean, they're very rationally looking at the fact that the administration's policy towards Iran is pressure, pressure, and more pressure. And even if they came to the negotiating table tomorrow morning, there's not going to be, even in a very successful negotiation cycle, a deal before a year and a half from now. And in this time period, they're going to get weaker and weaker. And even if the negotiations are successful at the end, they will have to give up their nuclear program at a point of their greatest weakness that would make them vulnerable before protests and uprisings domestically. And by that time, the United States and the West would have cut them completely out of the oil market. So it's a lose-lose situation. And therefore, they've decided that they need to act aggressively now to sort of thwart these sanctions.
So what then do you make of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's five-day trip to Latin America, to Venezuela, Cuba, Ecuador, and Nicaragua, where he's talking about resisting oppression and of the United States and developing an anti-colonial coalition, if you will? Is that an act of desperation?
No, I think it's a very sort of a shrewd public diplomacy internationally to try to say we're not isolated, we have options, and it's also a way of shoring confidence at home by saying that, you know, he's able to go on an international trip. There are countries that are receiving him, that Iran has some allies abroad. You know, when it comes to this sort of game of brinkmanship, governments have to sort of play to the public. There is a spin, if you would, out there in order to make you look less jittery or less vulnerable or less isolated than you are. Latin America for the past decade has served for Iran as a way of trying to create certain degree of diplomatic run room when the United States has been trying to cut Iran's diplomatic relations in Europe and in the Middle East and elsewhere. So it's basically part of the same game of tit for tat that they're playing with the West.
So, Vali Nasr, what is driving this, though? Is it coming from Netanyahu, in as much as we've had reports in the summer from high-ranking Israeli intelligence officials like the former heads of Mossad, the former chief of staff, the former head of Shin Bet, an unprecedented pantheon of senior intelligence officials went public warning the Israeli public that Netanyahu's bent on attacking Iran. And then the U.S. has clearly been behind the scenes trying to calm things down and trying to dissuade the Israelis. So has that led to the Israelis' leverage in as much as to saying to the Obama administration, look, if you don't let us attack Iran, then you better make these sanctions work?
Well, you know, the Israeli position hasn't really changed. I think the way we have to look at it is that the Obama administration had always said that sanctions are an alternative to war. But the new set of sanctions essentially across the line to become actually the beginning of war. There is a big difference between when you say, well, Iran cannot buy computers or aircraft parts, or it cannot do X, Y, and Z. And it's another thing when you try to cut Iran out of the oil market and cut the country's revenue completely, and you go to Ghana and Libya and Equatorial Guinea and say, you know, you should invest in long-run production that would replace Iranian oil. That really is the point at which sanctions become an act of war. And the Iranians are really treating these sanctions now as having passed the point of just being punitive and a substitute to war, to really being the beginning of something completely different. So I think, you know, there is a disconnect in the sense that in the United States, the perception is that these are more sanctions, tougher sanctions. They are still an alternative to war. They also can persuade the Israelis not to take any action on their own. But the Iranians are beginning to see this as no different from a military action. So the situation we may be facing is that for a long time, we've thought war would come when the U.S. administration or the Israeli government sit down and make a decision that, okay, tomorrow morning we're going to attack this nuclear facility or that missile facility. But we're in a situation where war is now gradually brewing because of the escalation of tensions that are created by these new set of sanctions. So we may end up at war, not based on a premeditated American or Israeli decision, but as a consequence of a gradual heightening of tensions.
So surely, Vali Nasser, you served in the Obama administration. Surely this is a nightmare for President Obama in an election year, isn't it? You already have the Republican candidates tripping over themselves to be more belligerent and bellicose towards Iran and basically saying that he's weak and he's allowed he abandoned the Green Movement, which is an absurd charge, which they all made in the last couple of days. Of course, had the U.S. supported the Green Movement, that would have provided the Iranian government with the very proof that they were trying to proffer any rate, that this was all a CIA plot. So, I mean, what they're saying is not just stupid, it's dangerous. And my feeling is that he's in a no-win situation here, because at the very least, the prices of oil is going to go up, and it already is going up as a result of the tension.
Right. Right. I mean, in some ways, you know, this new set of sanctions are probably were the least painful and least difficult and least confrontational option President Obama could have chosen. And they are still so draconian that the Iranians are reacting to it. The problem is, in a way, is that when President Obama had the opportunity between 2009 and 2011 for serious diplomacy, he didn't opt for it. And instead, he opted for a policy of pressure. Pressure didn't work. So come 2011, because of domestic American politics, he cannot take his pedal off of pressure. The only option he faces is to add more pressure. But this is already a dead-end strategy that, by and large, only placates domestic public opinion to back off the Republicans. But it really doesn't serve the purpose of solving this crisis. And you know, in some ways, the first 2 years of his administration now is sort of lost opportunity. I disagree with Robert Baer that the president actually seriously tried diplomacy. At a rhetorical level, yes, he made an intention that he was open to talking to Iran. And other than one meeting initially in Geneva and later on another one in Istanbul, there was no real engagement with Iran. This diplomacy requires a lot of footwork, a lot of engagement, a lot of patience, a lot of signaling, a lot of tit for tat. And it's possible that the Iranians would have reciprocated or not, but that was not really tested. So, you know, sanctions was used very early on as an alternative to both war and to diplomacy, with the expectation that you raise the pressure, the Iranians show up at the table and sign a suspension of enrichment. But it didn't work out that way. And now, you know, as you mentioned, he's cornered himself in a position that, because of domestic politics, he cannot back off. And he's actually being pushed to escalate tensions. But that's also pushing us closer to war.
So do you then buy the notion, Vali Nasser, that that the Iranians are not interested in diplomacy because the IRGC and the Supreme Leadership are so invested in the great Satan, they're not going to give that up?
No, I think, you know, they are invested in all of that, and diplomacy is always difficult. Look at the Arab-Israeli peace process. It took 10 years of Oslo peace process for it to fail. Diplomacy, even in the best of days and best of times, is very difficult. It's tedious. It's two steps forward, three steps backward before it yields any results. But I think right now, at the moment we are, the issue is much simpler for Iran. There is no path forward for them that actually would get into a good place. New sanctions are coming to the fore that can, in the long run, cut them out of the oil market in some ways permanently. As new contracts are not being renewed, other countries are being encouraged and given money to build capacity to replace Iranian oil. So you know, if Iran came to the table, this won't go away unless it sort of surrendered. And if it surrendered, then it's vulnerable to many other sorts of pressures internally and externally. So the Iranians don't see really currently any diplomatic alternative on the table. They are desperately trying to dissuade the West from going through with the sanctions. And the only card they have to dissuade the West is to tell them that, you know, if you do this, there is cost for you too. And that cost is called higher oil prices. So in a very, this is not a paranoia or irrationality or ideology. They have only one trump card left at this point in time, and that is the oil prices, and they are trying to aggressively use that before these sanctions really go through.
And on the other, at the other end of oil prices is the threat of war. So this is a, as you push them push their backs to the wall, they run out of options, and it gets more apocalyptic.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are many wars that have happened this way. When you know, one side can make a miscalculation, especially two countries that don't even have diplomatic relations, don't even have a telephone hotline between their navies that are operating in very close proximity, all kinds of things can happen. But you know, what we ought to think is that until now we thought that we will decide when war starts. And we will decide, you know, that it's going to be about taking out two or three or four nuclear sites. Now we're in a situation where we may not be deciding when war starts. And the war may not start over the actual nuclear sites. It may happen because there is a accident in the Persian Gulf, because during one of these naval maneuvers, something goes wrong. As a result, you then have a situation of gradual escalation into a military conflict. So, you know, sanctions for about a decade have produced certain stability in this scenario, because we were pressuring Iran, we were addressing the concerns domestically and even those of Israel, etc. But at the same time, the sanctions kept conflicts at bay. Now that period has ended. Now sanctions are no longer stable, and they're no longer preventing war, but rather making it more likely.
So, Valinasa, would you have to add to this rather pessimistic scenario? It's not a scenario. I think it's a very realistic assessment of where things stand at the moment. Surely there are other wild cards in this mix, as bad as it is, and that is the disintegrating situation in Iraq, the likelihood of civil war in Syria, the isolation of Iran if they lose Assad, and Hezbollah gets isolated and paranoid as well. So surely you have to factor those externalities into it, don't you?
Absolutely, and we often don't do that. And actually, it is not only Iran that loses in this kind of a scenario. There are many other wild cards in the Arab Spring. We often think of that the Arab Spring has been unkind to Iran. But it has also been unkind to the United States. All of our allies are under pressure. We don't know what's going to happen in Egypt. Iraq, the minute that we left, is disintegrating. Afghanistan is not doing well. Our relations with Pakistan is collapsing. Our allies in Saudi Arabia, in Jordan, they're all nervous. In fact, if Syria falls, there are many scenarios in which that other countries could lose equally or more than Iran will in Syria. I mean, a civil war in Syria can jeopardize Jordan. It can impact Syria. It can impact Iraq. It can impact Turkey. It can impact Lebanon. And in many ways, the region as a whole is also very fluid. Right now, we are sort of laser focused on the issue of Iran, divorcing it from the broader context of this region, which is quite fluid and quite unstable. And the Iranians also look at the same picture, and they figure that that might give them actually certain opportunities against us, that we might be underestimating their capabilities in the region and overestimating how much they have actually been weakened. The Assad regime may not fall for another 18 months or 2 years, during which time period, the issue of sanctions, war, nuclear issue will continue to unfold. And we may be having also many unforeseen disasters in the region, a civil war in Iraq, a resumption of hostilities in Bahrain, a civil war in Yemen, some kind of a blow between the Islamists and the military in Egypt. All of these are factors that are there, and some of these factors impact us more than they impact the Iranians.
So just in closing, Vali Nasser, what did you make of Robert Baer's conversation that he had with the Muslim Brotherhood leaders in Syria, where they complained to him that the State Department wasn't supporting them? And then Bob asked them, what are you going to do about the Alawites? And they said, we're going to kill them. And then Bob said, well, that's the reason why the State Department aren't supporting you.
Well, it was a very sobering observation. I mean, first of all, the State Department is supporting him as much as they could. I mean, beyond literally putting troops and arming the opposition in Syria, diplomatically and otherwise, we're putting a lot of pressure on Syria, the Syrian government. We're putting more pressure on the Syrian government than we put on the Iranian government in 2009. The problem is that we have only so many levers in Syria. You can only push a government that doesn't want to negotiate with the opposition so far. But what Robert was basically putting his finger on is that Syria is not going to transition like Egypt, that, Assad's going to go and the next day you're going to have an interim government, that Syria is going to actually explode. And if it explodes, it can we don't know what the outcome would be. And it could be many unforeseen outcomes. Israel could be a bigger loser than Iran, or Iraq can be deeply affected by what happens in Syria. And therefore, Syria is sort of a ticking bomb in the heart of the Middle East that can completely change many of the conversations we're having about that region.
Well, Vali Nasser, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
Very good talking to you, albeit depressing, but I thank you so much. Again, I was speaking with Vali Nasser, professor of international politics at Tufts University. He was born in Iran and migrated with his family to the United States following the 1979 Islamic Revolution. His books include The Rise of Islamic Capitalism, Forces of Fortune, The Rise of the New Muslim Middle Class and What It Will Mean for Our World, and The Shia Revival and Democracy in Iran. Between 2009 and 2011, he served in the Obama administration as a senior advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking more about unrest in Syria.